Hello and welcome to the very latest episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. It's a podcast about board games. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of games. But who am I going to be talking about them with? I'm going to be talking about them with Emily. New hire Emily. Australian Emily.
Oh my gosh.
Good day.
Hello.
Did you like that?
I'm trying to think of what a British thing is. Oi, 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 chap.
Cor blimey.
Oh, cor blimey. Oi, oi, governor. Oi, oi, gov. Let's talk about some games, innit?
Cor blimey, tell us about some board games. Roll of the dice.
Taking the mick.
I love that you asked before this podcast. It was like I was telling you about some nerd bullshit, and then you just said, who the hell is Mick? Or
like, I've heard it before. I just thought, I don't get a British person to ask. It's usually on like shows or something. And then I'm like, this is my opportunity, that insider information.
This is your opportunity to get, you've got a sort of caged British person. You've got, next 40 minutes, you could pepper me with any, you can throw Britishisms through the bars of the pod cage and I can tell you about their origins.
Yeah, like, what are fish and chips?
Pie and mash. What are fish and chips? Exactly.
Never heard of these things.
Do you have fish and chips in Australia?
Yes, of course we do.
Do you have pie and mash in Australia?
I mean, we have both of those things. It is not a term, pie and mash.
Do you have England's Mountains Green in Australia?
What on earth are you talking about?
Is it from the national anthem? No, it's not. It's from Jerusalem, the song, you know?
No, I don't know, but it sounds great.
And did those feet in ancient times.
Can we talk about some games, maybe?
You know? Let's talk about some games. We have got three games for the people at home on this podcast. We've got Infiltrators. It's a card game. It's not really a social deduction game.
It's got a gun in the box. That's the most important part.
It's got a gun. We didn't even use the gun in our game. I'm intrigued to see what it's for.
Interesting.
No. They're then going to talk about Crash Octopus, which is a game about trying to survive an octopus attack whilst collecting treasures.
It's got a gun.
It's not got a gun. And then we're going to talk about Bonsai, a game about growing tiny trees that I know nothing about. Are you going to say that this one has a gun?
No, it doesn't. It's got trees, you idiot.
It's got trees. Let's do a podcast. First up on this podcast, we're going to be talking about Infiltrators. This is a game from 2021, designed by John Keane and Liam Keane, with art by Manson and published by Broadway Toys Limited. It's a social deduction-y kind of game, but mostly just deduction. You're doing it socially, as you do most board games, but by and large, it's a game where you're trying to work out information collaboratively and collectively. I don't really remember how you play this game, and I'm sure I will as you tell me how it works again. But what I remember is that it's kind of a game a bit like The Crew, in that you have these like missions that you're going to go through one after another with potentially the same group or with different groups, it doesn't really matter, where you're trying to sort of solve a weird little deduction puzzle together. You've got this deck made up of a load of different cards of different suits, and you're trying to get the right cards to the right people at the right time.
You're spies, Tom, and the enemy spies have infiltrated the organization. You've got to kill them. You've got to kill these suckers.
Is that what the gun's for?
That is what the gun is for. That's the whole point of the game. But it's very interesting. Okay. I'll get into it. Because they're called suspects. You'll have these suspects, which are just random cards from the deck that are face down in the middle of the table. And then on your turn, you can nab a suspect, which will, you grab one of those cards, you put it into like a little stand that you have, and only you can see it. Mm-hmm. So the point of the game is you're essentially trying to give clues to the other people. You're working together. You're trying to give them clues to say, this is what my card is, so that they can guess what the suspect is. They can kill it. Everyone's happy, right? Very strange. Very strange that you're just having suspects and then you're just going around. You're like, yep, may as well kill them. We don't know if they did it, but we'll kill them all.
That's what I remember was weird about it, was that the verbiage was specifically suspects, not like killers or like, you know, bad guys. It was like, we suspect this person and we're going to shoot them with this big gun.
We just have to identify our suspects and then we're going to kill them. But yeah, I assume it's a translation thing. I think this is a Chinese game, I think.
Right, okay.
Other than nabbing a suspect, which you can do on your turn, you can only have one suspect at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it's a whole turn and they don't just give it to you. But anyway, you can give a clue. So you have a hand of cards. You can take one of the cards out of your hand. They'll have a number, they'll have a suit, but then they'll also have a list of numbers like next to the number of the card. And these numbers are numbers that that number is divisible by or can multiply up to.
So like a card that has 5 on it will also have a little strip next to the 5 that says like 5, 10, and 15, for example.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because it goes up to 15, these cards. So yeah. When you're giving a clue, you put down the card, and if you put it down vertically, that's saying this card has something to do with the suspect that I have. So it could be the color, it could be one of those numbers applies to the card that I have, like the suspect, right? And if you do it horizontally, that's saying this has nothing to do with it. Disregard everything on this card, nothing to do with it at all. Other things you can do is like, there's one called information exchange, which is essentially the same thing, but you're giving a card to someone else and being like, how does this apply to your suspect? Then there's bide your time, which is like gaining more cards into your hand because the deck essentially acts as the timer for the game. So once you're out of cards, you're out of luck, buddy. You didn't kill all these innocent people.
Once you're out of cards, you're out of game.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's time to pack up and go home.
And there's also bullets.
Oh yeah, talking about bullets.
Well, like bullets apply in the same way of just like limiting your tries. So each mission you'll have like a certain number of bullets that you can have. You'll have a certain number of suspects. You got to kill them. Like it's essentially how many guesses you can take. You understand? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You get that. You've played games before.
I've played a couple. You're limited by the deck and you're limited by the bullets. I think in our game we had like, it was like 10 suspects and 8, no, not 8 bullets, like 12 bullets. So we had two like things we could fire on like 50-50 guesses, but we couldn't, you know, they couldn't always be 50-50 guesses because otherwise we'd run out of shots.
Yeah.
I also remember you've got those little boards in front of you where you can mark off the information. So like if you pass someone, let's say you pass someone that five of green, which has 5, 10, and 15 on it, and someone puts it horizontally, you can cross off the 5, the 10, and the 15 and green because you know it's none of those things and slowly narrow down your options before going blap, 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 blap.
Yes, and I can't believe you didn't use the gun because, God, that adds so much drama to that situation. Like, because you can...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. It's so, like, silly and funny to, like, someone on their turn, when they're deciding I'm going to eliminate a suspect, like, I figured it out, it just becomes so much more dramatic than just saying, oh, I think you've got this. You pick up this, like, life-sized cardboard gun. you point it directly at this card, and then you're like... It's the blue six.
Shock horror, and then it falls to the ground dead with a bullet hole in it.
That's right.
I think there is like, it's definitely something weird about like, I think the reason we didn't use it is because there's something really strange about it being like ostensibly a fully cooperative game where you point guns at your fellow players.
But you don't, like, you point it at the cards. You did it wrong. You point it at
the... Yeah, but the card is right in front of the player.
No, you point it very directly down. I mean, it's like, it's bizarre to play with. I understand that. I did, though, and I found it very enjoyable.
Okay. Maybe next time it'll really set my world on fire if we use the cardboard gun.
Yeah. I thought it was fun. Whatever.
Maybe we just lack imagination.
You lack the whimsy.
I like a bit of whimsy in my games normally. The thing, okay, so I liked Infiltrators. I had a good time with it, but I heard some people saying they preferred it to The Crew, and I think that's crazy.
That's astonishing.
I think there's a lot of really like clever stuff in there. There's something about like the actual strategy of the game is like you can play cards in front of you, but if you're playing them in front of you, that information is somehow almost less valuable than if you give it to someone else. Here's like a good example of that. Could be something like if someone around the table has narrowed your choices down to being like, oh, it's either the yellow 7 or the yellow 14, and then you pass someone else the yellow 14, that not only secures information about what you have, but it also secures information about what they have at the same time.
Right.
And like, there's something about the cooperation in the game. That's like a really basic example. There's like cleverer stuff that you can do than just that. But I think there's something really smart about the way that the game immediately creates a puzzle that everyone's solving everyone else's stuff. And you almost stop worrying about what your own thing is quite quickly because you're helping everyone else out with theirs and they're helping you out with yours. I don't know if that made much sense, but I think that there is a really nice sense of cooperation that's fostered around the table pretty quickly with this one.
No, yeah, I completely understand that. Yeah, I think it's just keeping an eye on like what they would know about your card as well. And then you know, well, I've got a card that would narrow it down so well.
When we played it, we weren't clear necessarily on how much you're allowed to say about the cards you have, like, yeah, directly. Like, obviously you can't say, I've got the nine of blue or whatever, but like how much you're allowed to be like, wait, no, don't play a card on him because I've got something really spicy in here. Like, is that allowed?
I don't know either. I found it difficult to figure that out as well. And also, like, with that clue board that you have, because yeah, you might have cards in your hand, so you're like, oh, I know it can't be that one. So then can you then cross that off, like, and reveal that information to people? Obviously you shouldn't be able to, but like, I don't know, the board confused me as well. I barely used it.
My problem with that board was that we were playing like a five player game and it was on a big old table and people were very far away from each other, and I think that almost at four players or even like maybe three, it would feel like a sort of thing where you can get a bit more like, the puzzle might feel a little bit tighter and you might feel like a little bit more able to cooperate with everyone at the same time. Yeah. Did you play it with four? I feel like that's the recommended count, but...
No, I played it with three, but...
Was it good at three?
I thought it was very good, yeah.
You thought it was very good?
I really enjoyed it, and I don't think it was purely the gun, okay? I enjoyed the gun.
Okay.
But I enjoyed the... It definitely has that crew feel. I think the crew just feels a little more like, I don't know, more elegant, a little more like, mm-hmm, the constant silence and like you're coming up against a mission that is unsurmountable and then you somehow pull it through, mm, and it's like so rewarding.
Yes.
Whereas, I mean, it feels like its theme where it's just, you're running and gunning. You're just going through and having, you know what I mean though? You're narrowing stuff down. You're just throwing cards down. There is the timer, so you don't want to like waste so many cards, but you know, it doesn't feel, I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say.
It's not as sharp, I think. And that's a really good point, is that like, I really think that the crew almost like narrows to like a really sharp, like sort of moment when it's like, oh, we're going to do it. And then you make it, you know, yeah, at the last minute. Like both the crew and the sequel have that in spades, because it's like a small hand that you're probably going to play out like most of, if not all of, every time. And that sort of like, it has that tempo baked into it. Whereas I think that like, it definitely felt like Infiltrators was more of like a process. I don't know if that's a really harsh word to describe it.
No,
but like,
I get it.
Because you're trying to get through like quite a lot of suspects per game, it's like, it almost felt like inevitable in a way that the crew never does.
Yeah, exactly.
It felt like our success was predestined, yeah, whereas in the crew, it always feels much tighter.
Yeah, and I don't know whether that just will happen later on in the missions. I only got to mission 8, I believe. You know, like, we never had too many issues, like, running out of bullets, yeah, or anything. It was just like a fun little experience.
When you got up to, like, mission 8 or something, what were the twists that they threw in along the way? Because our one was just, we had to kill the suspects, murder them in cold blood, in order. That was our little twist.
Right.
What happens, is there anything else that happens later on that's cool?
I mean, there's one mission which is literally just, like, crew-esque of no discussion allowed at all.
Right.
But that only happens for one mission. Then they add, like, there's, like, number target cards, which is you have to go through the suspects in this, like, specific order, which I don't really know how that made anything more difficult, because you can't see what the suspects are anyway, but it's like, okay, sure. Like, I'll go through them in this random order specifically, whatever.
Right, okay.
But yeah, it was just stuff like that, or like limiting your hand size even more, because you can have like 7 and it was like, now you have 3. It's like, oh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That seems quite nasty.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's like, I think that I would like, I'd recommend that people like play Infiltrators. I think it's a fun game. I don't think it's like, if you've not got the crew, I wouldn't say like, this is the one you should get first. I think the crew is just like a real slice of magic. But I think it's good fun. We had a really nice time playing it. I want to play it again because I think that 5 is too many. But it's nice, right?
I think it's nice. I really enjoyed it.
It's got the I think it's nice seal of approval from Emily. We've got another game to talk about on this here pod. It's called Crash Octopus, and it's a game, it's a dexterity game. It's a big dexterity game where you've got an octopus and you're trying to steal its treasure. Or was the treasure already in the ocean? It's unclear. The game does not make it clear. Or does it make it clear? I don't know if I missed some of Crash Octopus lore.
Crash. I think the crash part of it is,
oh my,
there's been,
oh,
a ship that has crashed.
The titular crash.
I think so. The titular crash. and the titular octopus, coinciding as one.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I was just vibing it. I was, you know, again, we've talked about you seeing how the sausage is made in terms of podcasting. That's the kind of free roll and attitude that I have towards people's intellectual property and the games that they make. It's a dexterity game. You've got boats. You're trying to cram those boats full of treasure by the end of the game, which is going to get dumped onto the table in the most ridiculous sort of setup pattern I've ever seen. Like, let's talk about the octopus first, which is this big pink dome that you put right in the middle of your play area. And then you take all this treasure, which is a load of other wooden bits, and you just drop it on the octopus's head, which will entirely randomly scatter it around this sort of like rope ring that you put on the table. So sort of imagine it like a fried egg with a big pink yolk and a table. What's the thing that's white? A table white. And also loads of treasure on top of it, just like a regular fried egg. We talk about eating games a lot on this show/channel, and boy, this one's the tastiest.
If you have a pink yolk, though, maybe throw that out.
Yeah, maybe chuck that one. That's gone through a whole new, you know, style of being off, and it's gone back into being on again.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. So the way this game actually works is you're trying to collect that treasure, put it on your ship. On your turn, you will take your tiny little player flag, which is literally a tiny little wooden stick with a tiny little kind of papery, plasticky flag on top, and you will flick an item towards your ship. You may not flick the closest item. You may not flick an item that is already on board your ship. And there's another rule that I've probably forgotten. If that piece of treasure that you flick touches your ship, you get to put it on your ship. Congratulations. And if you manage to get all the pieces on your ship, then you will win the game. Do you win the game there and then? I think you do. The other thing you can do on your turn is flick the little anchor that's behind your ship, and then wherever you flick the anchor to, you then move your little boat so you can get into a more advantageous position to flick things onto. Or you might do that to get away from the titular crash octopus. Because every single time someone loads a thing onto their ship, this little crab marker will move around the edge of the board, hopping over these little beads. Most of the beads are a pearly blue, but some of them are black beads that will cause an octopus attack. And when the octopus attacks, every player will drop a dice on the octopus's head, trying to knock off treasure from other people's boats using the dice. If they fail to do that, or just wherever the dice lands, an octopus's body part will move to that position. So there's a face of the dice that moves the octopus's head. There's a face of the dice that moves the octopus's tentacles, which are like big barriers that get in the way. And I think that might be everything in Crash Octopus. That might be all the bits of the box. It's a little weird dexterity game that I think was nice. I'd seen this game at conventions a lot, and I've been entranced by it every time. And I've been thinking, ooh, what a treasure. What a sunken treasure this game might be.
Like, the aesthetic is the main draw, for sure. It is so chunky.
It's off the chain. It's
so colourful. Oh my gosh, it's like the cutest little thing. That's like entirely why I bought it. I had no interest in the dexterity. No, I did, but
you mostly bought it as an ornament.
Yeah, I was like, I want to flick a little wooden anchor with a flag. Yes, please.
It is it's a really gorgeous like production. It has this incredibly striking bright, I guess I'd describe it as neon blue and neon pink box that has Crash Octopus written over the front of it. And then, yeah, the table presence is ridiculous. Like, big rope ring that you plonk on the table with a giant pink octopus bobbing around in it and loads of treasure and boats scattered around. It looks spectacular. And I think, I mean, maybe, you know, I don't know how you felt about it. You said you played this quite a while ago, like maybe a whole year ago.
A whole year ago. I think so, yeah. And when I would play it, I couldn't even put it on my table. It's like that, like, I would have to play it on the floor.
Oh my goodness.
I would.
Is that because in Australia, they only sell tables that are really tiny? Because everyone in Australia is extra small?
What is this? Why are you doing this to me?
I'm trying to learn about Australia.
Is this hazing? Is this what people call hazing? This is mean. I'm 6'4", you know it. You think I just sidle up to these tiny little tables, my knees up above them?
By choice.
Eating my pink fried eggs.
Delicious Australian pink fried eggs. I think this is a neat game. I am, however, forever haunted by the fact that I got rid of my copy of Flick 'em Up. Have you played Flick 'em Up?
I haven't, but I've heard such good things. Why would you do that?
I think you should get Flick 'em Up now.
Okay. All right.
It's really good.
Okay. I'll come back in like an hour. You handle the podcast from here. I'm going.
Okay. See ya. Now it's just me and you, listener. We can talk about how much I like Flick 'em Up. It's a real, oh, it's really nice. Oh, what a little delightful little number.
Okay,
this
is disgusting.
Please interrupt me. Yeah, thank you. I'm really glad. I was going to make it, you know, the sort of like, you know, the juicy... never mind. So, it's Crash Octopus is good. This explanation, this podcast section is really getting off the rails from describing what is, I think, a pretty good dexterity game. I think it's nice. I think it's fun. I was a little bit underwhelmed by it, ultimately. And I guess you having not played it for a year might also speak to that.
Oh, yes, for sure. I definitely just like, okay. I feel so happy about seeing it in my collection. Like that box is so gorgeous. And knowing what's inside, I'm like, I love this. And I get the same sort of feeling from like I own that Sanrio Oink game. I can't remember what it's called. It's like, what is it? Like something Wolf, Speed Wolf, I think.
Yeah. The one that has like all of the... Does it have big challenges in it?
No, what? No, it's like a Snap-esque kind of deal. Big challenges.
Do you know about big challenges?
No, I guess I don't.
Big challenges was a scrapped Sanrio mascot character. I'm going to send you a picture and maybe I'll even put it as the podcast thumbnail or somewhere in the podcast so people can see big challenges. But I just think that he's adorable and such a good vibe. If you are not looking at if it is not the podcast thumbnail, if you can't bother to Google it, Big Challenges is a quite poorly drawn crocodile with the word Big Challenges underneath it.
Is that like the official graphic for it?
That's the official Sanrio Big Challenges graphic.
That's amazing, because that text, it feels like it's like far too far down, and then it's like it's leaning away from him. Like I don't want anything to do with him.
It's all wrong.
It's all wrong, and it makes it so right. I thought you were just saying, are there big challenges in the game? I thought you were like...
Yeah, I was sort of trying to sort of, you know, get at what the game is in a way that might be useful to the listeners. But no, I just wanted to know if there was a cool crocodile inside the box.
But my point is that I hate games like that. Like, I hate games like Snap. I hate anything where my reaction time is tested. But... that game is freaking gorgeous, and I just love having it there. And it's a similar vibe with Crash Octopus.
Yeah. A thing you like to own. Do you think that, like, because is Crash Octopus though the kind of thing? Because I don't know whether I should keep it or not. And I was thinking about keeping it purely so that I could like show it to people. But then I wonder if like games like Kabuto Sumo or even going and getting myself a copy of Flick 'em Up are like better dexterity games just to show people. I don't know if you've got like a go-to that you rely on if you don't have Flick 'em Up, because that's the one that like I always recommend and that I think a lot of people have.
I would love Kabuto Sumo. Ever since seeing it in your video, truly, I'm like, that is freaking gorgeous. And I've never gotten it, but...
There's an expansion that they gave to me at Essen that adds a chair, like to whack bugs with, like wrestling style, and like a table great. That you can flip and that kind of thing. It's delightful. Oh, it's very sweet. Yeah. So I think Crash Octopus is a good convention game. It's a good silly thing. Much like, actually, I talked about this on another recent podcast. Itten released another game called Nuts a Go-Go, which is a game about scrambling around a tiny little cup to pluck wooden nuts out of it to show to other people. And I think that's exactly, this fits in the same kind of category of games that I am really glad exist in the world. Games that I look at and go, hell yeah.
Yeah.
But games that I'm ultimately not going to pop off my shelf like, you know, once a month or something.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, on this podcast, we're going to talk about Bonsai, a game from 2023 designed by Rosario Battiato, Massimo Bozzi, Martino Ciacciera, and with art by Davoud Moghaddami. This game looks super cute. It's a little tile placement thing by the looks of things. I've not played this game, but Emily has. The thing that is most striking about it, if you look at a picture of this game, though, is that you've got a player board that looks like a little sort of bowl or a little pot, and then you're placing like little hex pieces that make a little tiny, charmingly blocky bonsai tree coming out of it.
Hell yeah. Oh my gosh, it's so gorgeous. So yeah, you have your little pot, and then you've got, there's four types of tiles. There's a wood, there's a leaf, there's a flower, and there's a fruit, right? Mm-hmm. They all have their own way of how you can place them. So the wood has to touch a wood, the leaves have to touch a wood as well, on at least one side. Then you've got the flowers, they have to touch a leaf, and then you've got the fruit, where they have to touch leaves, like, on two connecting sides, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You're sort of, like, growing... It grows like a tree, in that you have to put wood down first, and then leaves come off the wood, and then flowers come off the leaves, and then fruits also come off the leaves, but different.
That is so astute of you. That is absolutely correct, Tom. Well done.
Thank you. I got top marks.
Sorry, that sounded so condescending. I'm so sorry.
I was rolling with it.
Then obviously the difficulty of fruits, they're more difficult than growing a flower. So the points reflect that. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get any points for the wood, but you'll get 3 points for every, like, leaf that you put out. You get 1 point for every, like, open side on your flowers. So you don't want things surrounding your flowers. You want them to be in full show, blossoming out beautiful stuff. You understand?
Yes, I understand. Tell me how you place these tiles.
Wait,
then there's the fruit. Oh, what's going on with that? I don't understand.
Then there's the fruit. You can't put fruit next to fruit. Why would you think you can do that? But they'll give you 7 points if you get them on there. They'll give you heaps of points. So you want them uh-huh. you want them sweet fruit. So there are two actions that you can take on your turn. You can either meditate, which is, there's like a line of cards. There'll be four of them. You grab a card, and that will give you tiles into your supply. Or you can cultivate, and cultivating is grabbing the tiles from your supply and adding them to the tree. But some of the cards give you abilities. So there are tool cards, which will up your capacity of how many tiles you can have in your supply. There are growth cards, which will, when you decide to cultivate and add the tiles to your tree, you can put more of those tiles onto your tree. Then there are also these parchment cards, which are essentially like additional ways of scoring points. So it'll be like, you get 2 points at the end of the game for every fruit that you have. So you want to secure those, you get big points. Good stuff. And then there's also these three challenges throughout the game. This is actually pretty interesting. A lot of them are just like, you have to reach this many tiles of like this many of this certain tile. So it'll say like, get to five leaves, you get 6 points. But there'll be three of them. It'll escalate. So then the next one might be, you get 7 leaves and it'll be 9 points. And then you get 9 leaves and it'll be 12 points. But the interesting thing is that, like, when you reach that first goal, you don't just get it. You don't just get the goal. You have to choose whether you want it or whether to renounce it. So if you choose it, then you can't go for any of the further goals. But if you renounce it, then you're like, you're risking it all. Somebody else could get there first, or you may never reach it. And then you just wasted the opportunity to get points. I thought that was fun. That was pretty cool.
That's very spicy. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like that. So, I mean, for everything else that is so relaxing, it's just so gorgeous. And it's like, you know, you're just putting tiles onto a little tree. What is not to love? I thought that was a fun little, bit of spice. It's good stuff.
Good stuff.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed this game a lot. Yeah, I really did.
Oh, nice.
I wasn't expecting much from it. Like, it looks very pretty, like, on the box and everything. And, like, the idea of tile laying is nice and all. But, yeah, I don't know. I was just expecting it to be very mundane. You see it all the time. But I thought there was just something so special about it. And everyone I played it with just had a lovely time. Like, they just constantly throughout, it was just, this is so nice. this is just so nice.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah.
I do think, like, I'm looking at the pictures of this game and, like, looking at how these bonsais are sort of growing in slightly strange ways. Is it the kind of thing where, because you are trying to go for these goals, you have to sort of like bend and, you know, make your bonsai kind of grow in some slightly irritating directions for like future tile placement? Or is it like smooth? Because like what I'm looking at here is like a lot of people seem to have made their bonsais look kind of wacky.
Yeah.
And they don't look like these sort of, you know, perfect things. They look like they were sort of someone trying to, you know, very quickly try and grab one of those goals or renounce one of those goals before someone else can. Is that a sort of like, does it feel almost like a bit of a race, a bit of a desperate, you know, rush to get your bonsai looking perfect?
Yeah, I guess so. And I think that has less probably to do with the goals as much as like the placement rules are pretty restrictive. Like you have to specifically sure. have it connected to a, like a specific other tile. So you want to have like a lot of wood, and you want to have it be sparse. Like, I did not do that my first game. I made it very dense. It was just this chubby little tree, and there was just, you know, there was nowhere to go. There was nowhere to place any, like, leaves other things connecting everything. Yeah, it was bad. I did so terribly.
But a bad bonsai.
It was a bad bonsai. Just a bad bonsai. And then, is that another British term that I don't know about?
Bad bonsai?
Yeah.
Yeah, we say that all the time.
I'm sure. Yeah, so you want to kind of spread it out. And you want, because like you don't want flowers next to each other, and you can't put fruits next to each other. So you kind of just want to have a lot of room to have options. Mm. But there is also a challenge, which is like you want to overhang it on, like the first person to overhang their bonsai to the right of the branch of the pot.
Ah, or right.
Like to go under the pot.
Whoa.
You can just spread out. You can just spread out wherever you want.
This seems really cute. It seems like it's very thematic as well, in a sense. Like, these do look like, the things you end up with look like little dorky little bonsai trees.
They really do.
It's very sweet.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
Delightful.
Yeah.
So you've recently, for the site, you covered the Dorf Romantik board game, which is another little tile placer, maybe pleasing, gentle, relaxing kind of game. Would you recommend people get that? Or would you recommend they bonsai it up?
Okay, so like personally, I prefer bonsai. I had more fun with bonsai. I think there was more, like Dorf Romantik is what it is, which is just a relaxing cooperative time. Like you do not feel any sort of like tension or anything. You're just going through the motions, and that's fun and it's nice. And but that's like the experience it provides. Bonsai, you know, you're watching other people, there's a little tension there. It's still relaxing and it's still like gorgeous to look at. But you you know, like you want to grab cards that other people might need, because it's like I want to prevent them from being able to make a pretty little bonsai. I want your bonsai to be ugly.
They can't have one. I'm gonna torch it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there is the torch card, and I thought that was a little much, but
that's a little bit mean. Yeah. The pesticide card, the herbicide cards, were a little taking the mick.
They were the locust cards.
This seems delightful.
Yeah,
this seems cute. I want to play it. I want a copy now. I'm gonna go and get one.
Okay,
right now.
All
like
right.
How you went and got your copy of Flick 'em Up earlier, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and I'm flicking. I'm flicking so much. Tom, am I allowed to say that on this podcast?
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We'll be back next week with more chats about even more games. If you like this episode, what should you do? You should leave a review, probably. I think we need to ask for them sometimes, because it's nice to have reviews. It's nice to have nice reviews when people say nice things about the podcast. But if you really like the podcast, you can check out our bonus bits, which you can get by becoming a donor to the site. If you donate to the site through our website or through our Patreon, there's a whole extra bonus podcast where me and Matt talk about my time at Essen, and on the one after that, which is coming very soon, we're going to be talking about Vegas. That's like 2 hours of podcasts for the same as a Tesco meal deal.
Wow.
Do they have Tesco meal deals in Australia?
We do not have Tesco.
What's the biggest supermarket in Australia?
There are two, Coles and Woolworths. and I have no clue.
Coles? If Woolworths? They
have any... Yeah, Woolworths, but it's a supermarket.
It's does it come from the same root as the British Woolies?
I have absolutely
the deceased
no clue.
British Woolworths.
Is it deceased?
Oh, we need to get to the bottom of this. Yeah, Woolworths in the UK, it's dead and buried.
Oh my gosh, R.I.P.
It might exist online. Look, we can do this digging off air. as much as the listeners would probably wanna hear us talk about Woolworths another time. The Woolworths special is coming to you soon.
Yeah. Woo!
See you soon. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
I like that a lot.